You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Pat O'Keefe in for Anita. Hopefully she's doing something fun with her Sunday out of the studio. The number, 1-800-919-3776. And, you know, it's interesting because there's so many sports teams in this town, nearly two per sport, sometimes three per sport. So many different rooting options. But as far as fan bases go, there's a clear pecking order in terms of the fan bases of the teams in each respective sport. In baseball, it's the Yankees and the Mets. In basketball, it's the Knicks and the Nets. And the main reason for that is history. Obviously, the teams that have been around longer have had the opportunity to develop and establish more of a fan base. But today is a day, and this weekend is a weekend for the, and excuse the term, quote-unquote, other franchises in New York. This is not a day for the Yankees. This is not a weekend for the Yankees. And all indications are this is not a season for the Yankees. This is about the Mets. And this is about the Brooklyn Nets. And this is about the New York Islanders. Three franchises that have had to fight for attention in this town for nearly their entire existence. Not so much the Mets, but a lot of the attention they've gotten hasn't been the kind that they might have wanted. But it's all good right now. Right now, the Mets and the Nets and the Islanders in New York are the center of attention. Because while you got the Yankees scuffling and basically running in place, the Knicks, they were fun this year, but right now they're home for the summer, as are the New York Rangers. While all that's going on with the big brothers in the pecking order, the Mets are in first place on a three-game winning streak. A season-high 8 games above 500, having won 5 of their last 6 games. The Mets are a fun team. They're a scrappy team. They're getting it done in the absence of some important players on their roster. And they're led by one of the great athletes that we have seen in this town over the last 40 years. By the way, so are the Brooklyn Nets, although Kevin Durant hasn't been in this town as long as Jacob DeGrom, but still one of the great athletes that we've seen over the last 40 years. And the Brooklyn Nets today are getting ready for Game 4 of their Eastern Conference semifinal series in Milwaukee, looking to bounce back from that surprising 86-83 loss on Thursday night in Game 3, when after the first two games, it didn't look like Milwaukee was even going to get a game in this series. But Milwaukee's a talented team. It was a bad night for Brooklyn. It'll be interesting to see how they bounce back today. And then you have the Islanders, this scrappy, tough-minded, talented up-and-down-the-roster group that is sending Nassau Coliseum out in style during their one final run through the old barn. Game one of the equivalent of the conference final round of the Stanley Cup playoffs today for the Islanders at Tampa Bay. Exactly where they were 1 year ago when the Isles gave Tampa Bay all they could handle in a 6-game series loss before the Lightning went on to win the Stanley Cup championship. So this is a day and this is a weekend for the quote-unquote other franchises, for the Mets fan base, for the Nets fan base, ever-growing, for the Islanders fan base, always passionate. Because right now, those three franchises are ruling this town. As good as the Knicks were this season, as fun as the Knicks were this season, you cannot deny, even the most tried-and-true orange and blue Knicks fan can't deny the absolute greatness on display most nights by the Brooklyn Nets. Thursday night's 86-83 loss in Milwaukee, notwithstanding. The most diehard Rangers fan can't help but respect the heck out of this tough-minded Islanders team. I mean, 2 series in a row, the Islanders fall behind 2-1 and then rip through 3 straight wins without home ice advantage against Pittsburgh and Boston, some of the most talent-laden teams in the NHL. And now they have a chance to go up against the defending champs, unfinished business from a year ago. And how can you not love the Mets and what they're doing right now without Conforto and McNeil, without their center fielder Brandon Nimmo, without J.D. Davis, without Noah Syndergaard, without Carlos Carrasco. For the Mets, it's very simple. Yes, they have the best pitcher in baseball, and I spoke a lot about this yesterday on my show. In my opinion, the best pitcher in baseball over the last 35 years. That's who Jacob deGrom is. And right now, he's better than he's ever been. And right now, in my mind, he's better than anyone I have ever seen. He's the leader of the pack, but it's not just about deGrom. The Mets have three aces. The Mets have three guys in their rotation right now that if you take them individually would be the ace of almost any other team in Major League Baseball. And the fact that deGrom is one of them and better than everybody in Major League Baseball, well, that's how you get to 32-24. That's how you get to first place in the National League East after yesterday's 4-1 win over San Diego. Today, the Mets go for the sweep. DeGrom has a .56 earned run average. He has allowed four earned runs this season in 64 innings pitched. Marcus Stroman, who was the star of yesterday's game, a 2.33 earned run average. And Taijuan Walker, 2.07. Now, that's enough right now because the Mets lineup, depleted as it is one of these teams that whoever you plug in is going to do just enough to get the job done that day. And you know what? They don't have to do a ton because of the three aces I just mentioned, DeGrom and Stroman and Walker. And that's what the start of this season has been built on. It's funny because at the beginning of the season, I think there were more question marks with the pitching staff than the lineup for the Mets, but it's been the pitching staff carrying the way, even though David Peterson has struggled, even though you haven't seen Noah Syndergaard, even though you haven't seen Carlos Carrasco, you still have the best top three by far in Major League Baseball, led by the best top one in Major League Baseball in Jacob deGrom. So today is a day, and this is a weekend for the other franchises in New York. Now, are there more Knicks fans than Nets fans? Yeah. Are they rooting against the Nets? Most likely. Is it going to make a difference? I don't think so. The Nets are really, really good. The Nets are so good, in fact, that they played as bad a game as you could possibly play on Thursday night on the road against a team that was desperate for a win, which, by the way, has a ton of talent on it. And the Nets still almost won that game. And by the way, they didn't have one of their three best players who's one of the best 15 players in the NBA. That's how good the Nets are. They're on a Jacob deGrom type level in terms of their greatness. So today's a day and this is a weekend for the other franchises in New York. 1-800-919-3776. Plenty to get to. The Yankees, one step forward, two steps back. Time and time and time again. The Mets are rolling. The Nets are rolling. The Islanders are so much fun to watch and hard to root against.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
About a month ago, Corey Kluber pitched a no-hitter. The Yankees won three straight games in Texas. They followed that up with a three-game sweep against the White Sox, a first-place team, and you thought everything was good. And then everything changed the first day after that White Sox series when Corey Kluber took the mound for his next start after the no-hitter. And he left the game early when he was injured. And I think that took the wind out of the Yankees' sails, and they haven't been the same team since. And right now, you are what your record says you are. The Yankees are 33-31. At home, they're one game above 500, 17-16. On the road, they're one game above 500, 16-15. The Yankees this season have scored 252 runs. The Yankees this season have allowed 252 runs. That means the Yankees' record, by the way, is actually outperforming their run differential because their run differential indicates they should be a 500 team, but they're two games above 500. And you need to look no further than the run scored column in the American League East, in which the Yankees right now are in fourth place behind Tampa Bay, Boston, and Toronto by percentage points. Yankees are 7.5 games behind the Tampa Bay Rays. And they're 5.5 games behind the rebuilding Boston Red Sox after yesterday's 8-7 loss in 10 innings in Philadelphia. The Tampa Bay Rays have scored 321 runs. The Red Sox, 323. The Blue Jays, 303. The Orioles have scored 257 runs. The Yankees have scored 252 runs. They have scored the fewest amount of runs in the division. They can't situational hit. They can't hit with runners on base. They can't hit with runners in scoring position. And yesterday, to me, encapsulated what their season has been. Because it looked like, for a minute, it was a typical Yankees game. Jameson Taillon gives up four runs, records one out in the bottom of the first inning, leaves after a third of an inning. Yankees fall behind 7-2. They look lifeless. But no, yesterday, it was a rare occurrence this year that the Yankees battled back. And DJ LeMahieu smacks that huge three-run home run with one out in the top of the ninth inning to tie the game at 7. So the Yankees did show some fight yesterday after falling behind 7-2. But just as quickly as you could feel good about where you are, if you're a Yankee fan, in the 10th inning, the game is over. And just adding salt to the wounds, Ronald Torres, a former fan favorite, clubhouse favorite among the Yankees, scores the game-winning run in the 10th inning as they are sent home 8-7 losers. So in one afternoon, basically in 1 hour, you go from what could have been the biggest win of the season, if you were able to finish that off, to just another devastating walk-off loss to drop your record to 33-31. So that's the state of the Yankees right now. It is not good. 1-800-919-3776. Yanks, Mets. We'll talk about the little brothers in town who will have their day and who will have their weekend this weekend. The Islanders, the Mets, and the Brooklyn Nets. Let's go to the phones, though, and start with Simon in New Haven. Simon, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. What's going on?
This is ridiculous. I'll tell you what we got to do with the Yankees. First of all, we got to get rid of Boone. I'm sorry. It's the same, the Girardi-like thing every single day, the excuse after excuse after excuse. And I'm telling you, these pitchers pitch their hearts and soul on again. No respect, no run support. It's like LeMay hit that home run for nothing yesterday. I mean, come on, what is so hard about hitting the baseball? I mean, I wish somebody would ask Boone two questions. What is the obsession with grounding out and popping up all the time? And is Boone the manager of a baseball team or the Forrest Gump ping pong team? Because all I've been seeing the last few weeks now is ground out, pop up, ground out, pop up. And get rid of Gardner, for God's sake. He stinks.
Now, I know you've been on Gardner for a while, Simon. Look, I'm not going to sit here and call for someone's job, but I'm going to say what I've said before. Since taking over this position, now 4 years ago, with zero managerial experience, with an extremely talented and high-priced roster, in my opinion, Aaron Boone has done very little to distinguish himself as an above-average major league manager. Now, if you look at the numbers, the win totals, his first two seasons, 100 wins each of those times. I think if you dig deeper into those numbers, though, it doesn't tell the whole story because he happens to be managing at a time where there are more bad teams than ever before in Major League Baseball. His first two seasons, the Orioles were abysmal. The Tigers were abysmal. The Royals were abysmal. You had a lot of quote-unquote tanking or rebuilding teams. The Seattle Mariners were abysmal. So there was a huge divide between the upper echelon teams in the American League and the bottom of the barrel teams in the American League. And the Yankees were able to beat up on the Orioles and the Tigers and the Mariners and the Royals to the tune of a couple of 100-win seasons. But Aaron Boone has not done anything to distinguish himself. And, you know, I go back to the managerial change, and it's interesting we're talking about this now as the Yankees are facing the Philadelphia Phillies, and Joe Girardi is their manager, and that had to feel good for Girardi yesterday. When you replace a guy like Girardi, who had success, he won a world championship, he had the team in contention every single year. His last year, he brought the team within one game of the World Series. If you replace that guy with a guy with zero managerial experience, then that's really putting your neck on the line. And I'm talking about Brian Cashman, of course, who made the decision. And I think the expectations for somebody like Aaron Boone to come in and take that position from somebody like Joe Girardi are higher than what he has produced. I mean, and it goes to me beyond the wins and losses. And this isn't all on Aaron Boone. All right, it's not all on Boone. Now, he hasn't distinguished himself, but it's not all on him. It's on the entire franchise needs an overhaul. You know, Cashman's been doing it the same way over and over and over again. I mean, Jameson Taillon is basically Jarrett Wright. You know, the Yankees have these high-priced contracts on their roster, which gives them very limited financial flexibility. So when you go to put together your pitching rotation, you've got to take a flyer on a guy who at one point had potential but had an injury or had some issues, so you try to bring him in on the cheap. And time and time and time again, that hasn't worked for Brian Cashman. I mean, and the Yankees have been doing it the same way for 10 years now, ever since they won that World Series in 2009. You know, there was the brief period of hope in 2017 when you had the Baby Bombers and you had Aaron Judge, Rookie of the Year. You had Gary Sanchez, a monster at the plate. And you had Didi Gregorius, an exciting young shortstop. And you went to Game 7 of the American League Championship Series, and in a rare occasion were the underdogs against the Houston Astros. And that was fun. That was a fun, exciting Yankees team. But ever since then, they've gotten more and more stale. And by the way, who came in that offseason? Giancarlo Stanton. That had a lot to do. Giancarlo Stanton came in, and Aaron Boone came in that offseason of 2017 into 2018, and that had a lot to do with shaping the Yankees where they are. Because what are the issues with the Yankees right now? They can't situational hit. Well, Giancarlo Stanton certainly can't do that. They're too right-handed. Well, Giancarlo Stanton's right-handed. They get injured too much. They're out of the lineup. Giancarlo Stanton's injured and out of the lineup all the time. That was a fateful day in Yankee history. I think they got a little too big for their britches when Giancarlo Stanton was available and they felt they could get him on the cheap. Well, yes, they did. But all it did was hamstring them financially for the next several years, to the point now. Jameson Taillon's your fourth starter, by the way. What he gave you yesterday was a joke, but he's your fourth starter. He's not even Michael King, who you have in your rotation behind him. 1-800-919-3776, Emmanuel in Flushing. Hey, Emmanuel.
Hey, Pat, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Listen, I think yeah, at the end of the day, I think the little brothers wants respect right here. But it's not going to be easy, it seems like. Look at the Clippers. I mean, how many times they want respect? They can't even get there their own way. But I think at the end of the day, I think that little brothers teams like the Mets, the Islanders, and the Jets, I think at the end of the day, listen, I think if you think about, well, the Nets and Islanders in particular, they're now far in the playoffs. I think at the end of the day, I think they'll get their proper dues, but I don't think they will never get the true respect as their big brother counterparts.
I look at it this way. I think they can get the respect, Emmanuel. I don't think they will ever be revered the way the Knicks are or the Yankees are or the Rangers are in this town. And that's their place. That's their lot in life. But I do think that there is an avenue to get the respect. If you look at this objectively, and look, fans aren't objective all the time, and they don't have to be. Sports is fun. Sports is a release and an outlet, okay? So you don't have to be objective when you're talking about sports. If you're a diehard Knicks fan, you could hate the Brooklyn Nets, and you are absolutely within your right to do that. But if you do look at it objectively, it's hard not to respect those franchises. And maybe, just maybe to a certain extent, the fact that they are the little brothers have led to their success, especially in the case of the Nets and the Islanders, because they really had hit rock bottom just in terms of fan interest, performance on the court or on the ice not that long ago. I mean, 5 years ago, the Nets were in a new borough, in a new arena, without an established fan base yet, and they were literally the worst team in the NBA. Right after the Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce trade didn't work out. And also a team with no future prospects in terms of first-round draft picks. They had given all of those to the Boston Celtics. So they had to really start from the ground up. And Sean Marks came in, and Kenny Atkinson came in, and laid the groundwork for what we're seeing today. And they did this in steps. It started with clearing cap space and acquiring whatever draft picks they could. And then the next step was player development. And that's how you get a guy like Joe Harris, who was bouncing around the NBA and is now a starter and the best three-point shooter in the NBA, and Spencer Dinwiddie. And you take a reclamation project like D'Angelo Russell, a high draft pick who didn't work out in his first stop, and you set him on the straight and narrow, playing-wise. And that lays the groundwork for what ultimately turned into the free agency class of 2019 and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, which in turn led to bringing in James Harden. And now you have a team in Brooklyn 5 years later that is the betting favorite to win the NBA championship. There are no shortcuts when you're the Brooklyn Nets. And people can say, yeah, bringing in Durant and Irving is a shortcut. But if the Nets didn't put themselves in position to become attractive to those guys, they never would have come here in a million years. It just goes, it speaks volumes to the job that Marks and Atkinson did, that guys like Durant and Irving would A, even consider the Brooklyn Nets, and B, end up coming to Brooklyn and signing here together. So it wasn't a shortcut. It was just very efficient rebuilding on the part of the organization. The Islanders, the same thing. I mean, gosh, the Islanders hadn't gone to a conference final since 1993. I mean, they were all over the place as a franchise. Head coaches, general managers, terrible arena, laissez-faire fan base because the team was so bad. Well, you bring in one of the greatest hockey executives of all time in Lou Lamoriello, and you're wondering, wow, does Lou still have it? You know, he was great with the Devils, but his last few years weren't as good. And then he goes to Toronto, and they kind of underachieved while he was there, and they let him go pretty quickly. So maybe the game has passed Lou by. The game has not passed Lou by. And Lou came in and remade this Islanders franchise in his image. He got a big name and a big-time head coach who has the perfect temperament and demeanor to run this franchise. And here you go. The Islanders were in the Final Four for the second consecutive season, about to start their playoff series with the Tampa Bay Lightning today, which, by the way, you can hear right here on 98.7 ESPN New York. Our coverage of that beginning at 2:30 this afternoon.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
It's time for the Truly Hard Play of the Game, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. For my Play of the Game, or Play of the Day, I'm looking at Game 4 of the Eastern Conference semifinals between the Nets and the Bucks from Milwaukee, coming up at 3 p.m. Eastern time this afternoon. Nets are giving 2.5 points, and I like the Brooklyn Nets there. I think they played as bad as they possibly could in Game 3 and still almost managed to come back and win the game. I just don't think Milwaukee has the horses to compete with Durant and Kyrie Irving on offense. I think Joe Harris has a bounce-back game after shooting 1 for 11, so I like the Nets on the road giving 2.5 points, and that's the Truly Hard Play of the Game, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, please drink responsibly. All right, a lot of Yankees talk as they go down again yesterday, 8-7 in 10 innings to the Philadelphia Phillies. They'll wrap up that mini two-game series this afternoon in Philadelphia. Every time you think the Yankees are about to turn the corner, they take a step back. Minnesota series last week, the Yankees win the first two pretty handily against a bad Twins team. They're on the verge of the three-game sweep. And Aroldis Chapman, who's been great this year, implodes in the bottom of the ninth inning, giving up two-run home runs. Yankees don't sweep the Twins as they lose the series finale. Yesterday in Philadelphia, they fall behind 7-2. A good sign in that they battled back, forced extra innings on DJ LeMahieu's three-run home run. And just when you're feeling good about things, they lose in 10 innings, 8-7. You know, you've been following this, Ty, and we're with Ty Butler, Mike Aleshmagun, producing the show here this morning. I mean, it's frustrating to me, Ty. It's one step forward, one step back. This Yankees team has been running in place basically the entire season.
I think I might be the reason the Yankees are struggling. I'm a diehard Yankee fan. On April 14th, I tweeted this out. I said, I don't care what happens from now until the end of the regular season. The Yankees are winning the World Series. And it was a game. I can't remember the game it was, but they had lost. It was a dreadful game. They were so bad. But I made that bold proclamation, and they haven't even come close to looking like a World Series contender since then.
April 14th, they were 5-7, and you proclaimed they were going to win the World Series.
I was so confident coming into the season. You get Gerrit Cole, a full season with him. You've got look at the lineup. Like, for this team to be so bad offensively, when you employ Aaron Judge, DJ LeMahieu, Giancarlo Stanton, Gleyber Torres, now you've got Andujar back. You know, as you mentioned, Voit led the league in home runs last year. I know he's hurt right now, but to have this lineup be this bad offensively, I mean, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And to me, I think that the biggest disappointment is that we have just universally accepted that a 32-year-old in the prime of his career making this much money, and I'm talking about Stanton, like he's a guy that's just going to be a DH, doesn't have to play the field. We're okay with him resting. Like, how is it that we're just used to that? This is a guy who they're paying all this money. He's young in his, relatively young and in his prime, and he can't stay on the field.
Stanton, and that's okay. To me, it encapsulates everything that's wrong with the Yankees. His salary does not give them financial flexibility. His fact that he can't stay healthy and help the team half the time obviously hampers their productivity. And the fact that he can't play the outfield anymore. You said, he is a designated hitter that clogs up an important spot in your lineup that you could use for more roster flexibility. And Giancarlo Stanton's presence on this team encapsulates all of that and everything that is wrong with this ill-constructed Yankees roster now.
And when you acquired him a couple of years ago, you thought he was going to be just a luxury. You were just adding a league MVP to a lineup that featured so much firepower. And now it's like it just feels like everyone is just an automatic out. When the Yankees went down yesterday 7-2, I'm like, all right, this game's over. I'm turning it off. And then I look up at 7-7, I'm like, oh, wait, this might be a game, and then they lose, and it's like, no, why did I ever tune back into it? Of course they were going to lose. It just feels like that. And I go back to 2017, that magical run, it just always felt like they were in, it was the polar opposite. It felt like they were always in the game, whether they're down, six runs or down one run. You feel like this team is going to somehow make a run, whereas this year, they get down 2-0, Pat, and the game's over. Like, mentally, I'm like, all right, this game's done. There's no way they're going to be able to muster any type of comeback or any type of offensive firepower needed to win this game.
Giancarlo Stanton, to me, has had the most important at-bat of the Aaron Boone era. It was in the American League Division Series in 2018 against the Red Sox at Yankee Stadium, where the Red Sox were trying to close out the series,
game four.
The Yankees mounted a rally in the bottom of the ninth inning against Craig Kimbrell, who was on the ropes, couldn't find the plate. Stanton comes up with the bases loaded and one out and struck out swinging. Didn't even put the ball in play, didn't put the ball in the air, didn't advance the runners, and the game ended up ending when Gary Sanchez sent one back to the left field wall.
So close.
And that was that. That was the biggest at-bat, if you think about it, since that magical run of 2017. And that at-bat by Stanton is everything that he is all about. He's all or nothing. But this is baseball, right? The old saying in baseball for years, if you make out 7 out of 10 times, you're a Hall of Famer. So the all or nothing thing isn't 50-50. The nothing is always going to far outweigh the all. And the problem is, with a guy like Stanton, you're sitting around waiting for the all, and it comes less and less frequently by the year, and it comes not at all when he's injured and he's not available to play. So there's some serious problems with the Yankees.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
The equivalent of the conference finals in the Stanley Cup playoffs gets underway for the Islanders and Lightning. Game 1 later this afternoon from Amalie Arena in Tampa, Florida. And, of course, you can catch all the action live right here on 98.7 ESPN New York. Our coverage beginning at 2:30. Talking with Ty a moment ago, I said that Giancarlo Stanton had the biggest at-bat during the Aaron Boone tenure. Let me walk you through this inning because my facts were a little off as I remembered it. bottom of the ninth inning, game four, ALDS 2018 against the Red Sox. Red Sox were great that year. They ended up winning the World Series against the Dodgers, but the Yankees had Craig Kimbrell and the Red Sox on the ropes in the bottom of the ninth inning at Yankee Stadium. Aaron Judge led off with a walk against Kimbrell, and then D.D. Gregorius singled him to second. And that's when Stanton came up. First and second, nobody out. Yankees down 4-1, and he couldn't even advance the runners. Stanton struck out swinging. It changed the entire tenor of the inning. Luke Voit followed with a walk, and then Neil Walker, with the bases loaded, was hit by a pitch. So then it was 4-2. Gary Sanchez then hit that fly ball to the warning track in left field to bring home a run to make it 4-3. And then Gleyber Torres grounded out to end the game. But Stanton changed the entire tenor of that inning. And Stanton's best season by far as a Yankee was his first season. Somehow, miraculously, he actually played in 158 games, and his numbers were good. There were 38 home runs. There were 100 runs batted in. Remember, Aaron Judge missed a bunch of that season because he was hit on the hand and broke a bone in his wrist or hand and missed a significant amount of time. And in the middle of that season, Stanton carried the Yankees' offense. But when it came to crunch time, in that moment, with the game on the line, with the season on the line, he went down swinging. And unfortunately, that's who Giancarlo Stanton has been. And the other thing he's been for the Yankees is not available, because his three seasons since 2018, which was his first season in New York, he played 18 games the following year. Last year, he played 23 out of 60 because of the shortened season due to COVID. And this year so far, he has only appeared in 45 games. So that's 68. That's 86. He's played in 86 games over the last three seasons, including this one. 1-800-919-3776. All right, let's go to the phones. Jimmy is calling in from Staten Island. What's up, Jimmy?
Hey, what's going on? Good morning, Pat. How you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Can't complain, man. Actually, I was just telling Ty on the phone that I was at the Yankee game yesterday, and those bats were not. It was so bad that I decided to leave. I guess when did they came back the bottom of the eighth, right?
Well, they tied the game in the top of the ninth when DJ hit the 3-run homer.
Yes, I literally left in the ninth when they came back, so it was hilarious. Like as I'm walking out, they're getting like I got a notification that they came back, but. My point in me calling is the fact of I'm just very confused on as to why, you know, Cashman. I feel like there's no sense of urgency on Cashman's part and on Boone's part. I don't know if their jobs are not on the line. But you have four prospects right now in the minors. You have you have Debbie, because Tyone pitched horrible yesterday. He needs to be in single A. He needs to be playing for the Staten Island Yankees. How he pitched yesterday. You have Debbie. You have Clark Schmidt. You have the kid Gill. These guys you can move up. And then you got they have backs in the minors. If Cashman doesn't want to make a move, you understand, because he doesn't want to go over the cap, you know, which I have a problem with. But at the end of the day, like, this team is either make it or miss. You know, so if they don't this year, I mean, on my opinion, I don't know how you feel about this, but if they don't do what they have to do this year, you understand, this team has to be broken up. And I just feel like, you know, Cashman and Boone, like, there's just no urgency, right? There's no sense of urgency. I don't know if it's just because they know that they have their jobs, they figure that they win the wild card, or if they win, you know, everything's okay. Like, but you have guys in the minors. Move these guys up. You understand, like, you know, have these guys pitch. It's that time. And I'm not even a Yankee fan, but it's that time. Like, it's that you need sense of urgency.
Now, I hear you, Jimmy. Thanks for the call. I mean, here's the thing. Where is Davey Garcia? I understand He's still young. He's 22 years old. I thought he pitched very well last year. When the Yankees were scuffling about a month into last year's two-month season, they brought up Davey Garcia, and he gave them a huge shot in the arm. And that coincided with Gerrit Cole getting better and the bats starting to come alive. But I really think Davey Garcia's presence in that rotation, there was a three- or four-start stretch where you could count on a quality start from Garcia, and that really helped them down the stretch. Where is he now? Like, I understand he didn't earn a rotation spot coming out of spring training. As far as I understand it, there were two spots available. One was Gerrit Cole. Obviously, he had a spot. Corey Kluber had a spot. And Jameson Taillon had a spot. And then you had guys like Domingo Herman and Davey Garcia and Jordan Montgomery and Michael King competing for those last two spots. Garcia didn't get one. Okay, that's fine. It went to Herman. Now, Cole's been excellent. Herman, after a slow start, they sent him back down to the alternate site. He's back. He's been very good. And Jordan Montgomery has been pretty good. Now, that's a solid top three, especially what you're getting from Gerrit Cole. Let me rephrase that. That would be a solid top four if you could slot somebody in to the number two slot, which it looked like Corey Kluber was about to become coming off of that no-hitter. But Kluber's out. So that opens up a spot in the rotation. I don't understand why it's going to Michael King. Now, his numbers aren't terrible, but Michael King doesn't give you any length. So when he pitches, it's essentially a bullpen day. They've brought Garcia up two separate times for two separate spot starts. He hasn't been allowed to get any consistency going on the Major League roster this season. He pitched once. He didn't pitch well either time, okay? But he comes up, he pitches, he didn't pitch well, but he didn't pitch terribly, and they sent him right back down. And then he came up again a few weeks later. Didn't pitch well, didn't pitch terribly, and they sent him right back down. Where is he right now? Why is he not in this rotation? I mean, he's a big-time prospect who pitched well last year, the final month of the regular season. Taillon has been frustrating, and I'm not surprised. This is exactly what I would have expected from Jameson Taillon. You know, he's had a good game or two, but a good game for him is what, six innings and three runs? I mean, if he gives you six innings, you're throwing a parade. You know, it's been 12 starts for Taillon, and he's pitched 53 innings. He's got a 5.74 earned run average. You know, the Kluber injury hurt. It hurt a lot because he was pitching well, and he was coming off a no-hitter, and the Yankees were playing their best ball of the season, and then Kluber went down. And now all of a sudden, Herman's your number two starter instead of your number three. And Montgomery's your number three starter instead of your number four. And that throws everything out of whack. And they essentially, if Taillon's going to pitch the way he did yesterday, have two empty spots at the bottom of the pitching rotation. I don't understand why one of them doesn't go to Davey Garcia. 1-800-919-3776. Spike in St. Pete. Good morning, Spike.
Good morning. And hope you have a wonderful day. Heard the weather's good up there. A couple of things with the Yankees and one Hope's question. We were on the beach yesterday, and, you know, it's just listening to the stream and the full parade and everything. I'm trying to follow the Yankee game and everything. Sterling went ballistic when they lost. Ballistic. Now, I love Sterling. He's 83 years old. He's born with golden pipes. You know, you're in the business. He dreamed for those pipes.
I wish I had them, yeah.
Right?
I said, I wish I had those pipes.
Yeah, they're very few. There are a few around. There are a few around, but you're just born with those pipes, you know. And he just went, hey, listen, I told Ty, you know, you kind of quit on him. We have the vehicles. You know, I'm lucky now. I got the tablet and the phone. And I can watch and stream and listen, you know, to my guys all day long. It's great radio. I love it, you know. But that was a bad loss. That was a bad one. And they're going to bring Boone. They're not, it looks to me, you know, like the Yankees aren't constructed properly. It just looks to me. I may be wrong. They may come back to their pedigree. They certainly look better than on paper than Toronto, who has young, you know, sons of major league stars basically in their lineup. But you got to let it play out. That's all. And the leaders had their outings. You know, they even Mariano went through these things. I got one Hoops question. So I was telling Ty, you know, we're both NBA first guys. I have a feeling you may be. And I watched the Clippers, and I'm amazed. The winning team is probably going to be Brooklyn, but it looks like whoever's going to shoot the best percentage of threes, which is no revelation to tell you that. But I watch Reggie Jackson. He's like shooting threes out of this world. And Paul George, you know, he has his games. For some reason, they pick on him, which is unfair, knowing his background and all, you know, with the, what do they call him? What do they call him? Playoff PG or
well,
pandemic?
Playoff P, I don't know. He came up with that moniker.
Yeah, oh, he did. Okay, so I don't feel so bad. So.
No.
But, you know, you watch the great ones, and the three great ones have been for 4 or 5 years, have been, you know, in the order, you know, LeBron, Durant, and Kawhi. And I want to see Kawhi, because I really love his game. I want to see him, you know, rub out that little blemish from last year's seventh game. But I think Brooklyn's going to win. I like to hear that. And have a great day. I think Brooklyn's just ready to win. I think Harden will wait until the finals, probably. That's what I would do.
Spike, thanks as always for the call. I think you're pretty smart. I think they can wait as long as they feel comfortable with Harden. Today's going to go a long way towards determining that, because if Milwaukee can pick up today and even this series at 2 games apiece, then you're playing with fire. Of course, you're not going to bring him back if he's not ready, but if he's 85% right now and the Nets win Game 4 today and take a 3-1 lead, then you don't really need to roll him out there for Game 5 this week at Barclays Center. So today's going to go a long way toward determining how much rest you can get for James Harden. Hard for me to pick against the Brooklyn Nets at this point. I will say this regarding the Western Conference. Look out for the Clippers. I know they trailed their series 2-1. I think they found something last night as I was watching that game. And the Clippers are going to go as far as Paul George allows them to go. You know what you're going to get from Kawhi Leonard. I agree with Spike. He's one of the top three players of this era, along with LeBron James and Kevin Durant. You pretty much know you're going to get 30 points from Kawhi on 55 to 65% shooting. Are you going to get the Paul George from last night, who shot 6 for 10 from downtown and scored 31 points? Or are you going to get the Paul George who can go out and shoot 4 for 15 and give you 11 points? And that's going to determine how far the Clippers go. I know the Clippers, seed-wise, are the lowest remaining seed in the Western Conference as the 4th seed. But look, the Utah Jazz are banged up. They've been without their point guard, Mike Conley. At the end of last night's game, Donovan Mitchell injured his ankle. He says he's fine for Monday's Game 4. We'll see. But I think this series had a seismic shift in momentum last night. And if I'm projecting it forward, let's assume Phoenix is going to be in the conference finals. They can close out Denver today. No team has ever come back from 3-0. If it's a Clippers-Phoenix Western Conference Finals, I like the Clippers in that matchup. So look out for the Clippers. I mean, they're the Clippers, right? So they're never top of mind as far as a team that we know can get it done in the clutch. Look out for the Clippers. I think they found themselves last night in their return to Staples Center.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Ty, never short on opinions. Just talking during the commercial break. Brooklyn Nets or the field the rest of the way to win the NBA championship, Ty? And you say
Brooklyn.
It doesn't matter to you No. whether or not James Harden returns.
No, they still have two of the top 15 players in the league. And they've shown that even without Harden, they're good enough to beat a Bucks team who many said would give them a challenge with Harden. So if they're able to get through this series, I think Embiid is going to present a different challenge for them because they don't have an answer for him as far as an interior presence on either side of the ball. But I don't think it's going to be easy. I still think they win the championship, regardless of who comes out the West.
I think there's one team each of the remaining steps of the way that could give them problems. The next round, obviously, you said Philadelphia, because you can make an argument. Two of the top 15 players? No, maybe two of the top 20 players if you take into consideration everything that Ben Simmons does. And,
yes.
And they're just such a uniquely constructed team in terms of being built on defense and size. And then I really would be intrigued by a Nets-Clippers NBA Finals. And wouldn't that be something? Because I started the show today talking about how this is a day and this is a weekend for the quote-unquote other teams in New York. The Mets are in first place. The Nets are two steps away from the conference finals. The Islanders are in the conference finals beginning today. Meanwhile, the Yankees are slogging along. The Knicks are home. The Rangers are home. But that NBA Finals, Nets-Clippers, would be the ultimate quote-unquote other team's matchup.
But it is interesting, though, that the conversation has now become if the Clippers get to the finals. It just shows you how much they've underachieved, because you get Kawhi and Paul George. They should be the favorites to come out the West, and yet they've gone down 2-0 in first and both of their series, last series against the Mavs and then this time around against the Jazz. But yes, that would be a fascinating matchup. And also, we saw last night what would make the Clippers special. If Paul George plays the way he did in that first half, bookended by Kawhi being special in the second half, that's a pretty tough team to beat, regardless of who you're going up against. And if you get that Clippers squad against this Nets team with no James Harden, I could see it going 6 or 7 games. But I still give the edge to Durant and Irving, because I just can't find it in me to trust Paul George in the biggest moments, even as good as Kawhi is. Kawhi is one of the greatest playoff performers we've ever seen. But with Paul George being his co-star, I'm taking Kyrie Irving, you know, 7 times, twice on Sunday.
Listen, Kawhi Leonard chose to hitch his wagon to Paul George's star, okay? This is what he said when he was deciding between staying in Toronto, going to the Lakers, going to the Clippers. He said, go get Paul George, and I will come to Los Angeles. And isn't it ironic now that his chance of doing something completely unique, which is winning an NBA championship with 3 different franchises, only one guy's done it,
the GOAT,
and he did it last year.
Yep.
His chance is really contingent on Paul George, because I've said what you just said. You know what you're going to get from Kawhi Leonard. If you get last night's version of Paul George, they're a team to be reckoned with. They're, in my opinion, the best team right now in the Western Conference and could give the Nets a series. But if you get our old friend Playoff P,
Pandemic P, Playoff P.
If you get Playoff P, if that's who shows up, and you know he's 5 for 17, and he disappears in the fourth quarter, then they've got no chance. And that's what makes his team frustrating. That's what makes him frustrating. And that's what makes it ironic. A player as great as Kawhi Leonard, and as serious a player as Kawhi Leonard, his chances of winning an NBA championship hinge on Paul George.
Yeah, and if you get, but just imagine, man, like you said, the two little brothers, you get the Nets and the Clippers in the finals, you know, with the chance to win a championship. I mean, in LA, the Lakers just won it last year, so I don't know how much damage you're doing as far as, like, the city and like, who runs the city. But with the Nets, haven't had a title here since 73, so that would just be fun, man. That would be a lot of fun.
I think, you know, I would look forward to the narratives about how it would become a Nets town here or a Clippers town in Los Angeles. I mean, the one thing we saw this year, that it's not going to happen. Like, will it put a dent, especially here in New York? Will it put a dent? Yeah. I mean, the Knicks, like you said, haven't won since 1973, so it's been a while. But what we just saw during the Knicks season and during the Knicks run to the playoffs, it clearly still is a Knicks town. I mean, that entire first-round series, the Nets have 3 of the best 15 players in the NBA. They're dominating the Celtics, and the Knicks are on the back page for like a week and a half straight. And then the Knicks season ends, and the Nets take over the back page, and that's where we are right now.
But I don't think the Nets fans actually care about that. It's just such a straw man argument.
There's a narrative out there, and I'm not saying it comes from the Nets fan, and I don't think it does, but it's a narrative, and the narrative always presents itself because why? Well, because we got to fill 24 hours on this station every day, right? So we got to talk about something.
Yeah, I think the Nets fan just cares more about winning the championships.
They like both you can do. Have, You're right. No, they both do.
You can have your back page. You can have your front page. You can have all the headlines, talk shows, you know, going in about whatever storyline is related to your team. You can have all of that. We just care about winning titles. We employ 3 of the top 15 players in basketball right now. Let's just put ourselves in position to not just win this year, but in the next 5 years, let's see how many we can get. I think that's what they care about more than, you know, what the Knicks fans cares about right now.
I think you're right. I think both Nets fans absolutely do care more about that than the Knicks fan cares about it.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.